You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Samuel Adams, Brewing the American Dream. Hear stories from their inspiring entrepreneurs on Let's Talk About Food, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
I believe that today's guest was brought here by destiny. 8 years ago, I got their restaurant logo tattooed on my arm, 3 years before they opened. We've both owned and operated mobile food businesses, albeit theirs has outlasted our 6 month stint in a fortunately much more successful way. And lastly, they're a partner-led business that both met in restaurants.
Aww, yeah, from one partner-led business to another. So we're joined here today with Jordan Rubin, who is the co-owner and of Crispy Guy and the chef owner of Mr. Tuna and forthcoming Bar Futo in Portland, Maine, as well as Marissa, who is the co-owner and director of operations at Portland, Maine's Mr. Tuna and the forthcoming Bar Futo. And we also have Ian Driscoll here, who will be the CDC of the new spot called Bar Futo, which is opening soon. Hence the title of the show. Soon-ish. Welcome. We're so excited to have you all here. Thanks for coming down to see us.
Thanks for having us.
Also one of our first in-person podcasts in a little while. No?
Yeah, it's been a month or two.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
This latest COVID wave. Yeah. It's always more fun to do them in person.
Yeah. Plus we got our excuse to come to the city.
Come to the city.
Yeah. Hang out.
Come to Brooklyn.
Yeah. You guys are really expanding. So this is our third concept. Our third concept. It's your third concept. I'm not involved at all.
Number six for the tattoo.
Except for the logo.
Love that.
So tell me about Bar Futo, what it is, where it came from, concept to us.
So Bar Futo is, it's kind of like an izakaya, super heavy focus on the open flame cooking on Japanese coals. So that's going to be a huge part of it. You know, definitely some seafood. We're going to do some whole grilled fish, some larger cuts of meat, maybe some steaks, and some like large pork chops.
Lots of skewers.
Yeah, tons of skewers. We're going to have, you know, pretty extensive sake list, especially for Maine. It's there's not a lot of sake, and we want to bring more sake to Maine and to Portland, and a friend of ours, Alyssa Makiko, is helping us with the list. She has her sake bar, the first sake bar in Boston.
Koji Club.
Yeah, Koji Club. Yeah. Yep. So, you know, we'll have, some Japanese cocktails, Japanese-inspired cocktails, and, you know, Ian's going to be running the kitchen. It's a concept that we've kind of been working on for a while now.
How long has it been in process?
A couple of years.
Yeah.
I think we've just been talking about it, like, loosely, and then, like, we had some projects come down the line, and it just kind of naturally just evolved for us.
When did you guys find the space?
We signed the lease in February,
And
we were kind of negotiating for a month or two. So, yeah, probably, like, late December, early January, we actually started talking to the landlord, and it took us a minute to work out some of the details, but we signed in February.
Was it a former restaurant space as well? Or?
It was a Five Guys.
Okay.
Ah. Yeah. Five Guys to Izakaya.
Yeah. I like it. So it had the bones, you know, it had good bones, but obviously
heavy
it was...
venting and like, right?
Yeah.
Definitely. Lots of fryers.
Several fryers, flat tops. Like what?
None of the equipment were there. No, they took everything out. The only thing that was there was the hood. Actually, this is a big, long story, but they removed all the ductwork.
No,
the building.
Why?
Five Guys did when they left.
Not Five Guys, actually. The landlord. So they, the restaurant is under a parking garage. So the whole parking garage got like a facelift. During COVID, so for about 2 years, they've been working on that parking garage, and when they did, they ripped out all the ductwork, the fan.
So you have a vent that goes to nowhere.
Yeah, just a vent that goes to nowhere. And I mean, we knew that, but we didn't know exactly how much ductwork that needed to be done until we really got into it.
So now you have to put it all. You had to put it all back in.
Well, we had to put it in, but it used to go to the roof, and now we had to run it through the inside of the parking garage, about, I'd say, close to like 100 yards of it, between both directions. It has to go.
Because are you? You're cooking with live fire, I assume, if you're going for this.
Right.
Yeah.
And we needed a special duct and a separate fan, because I don't know about here, but in Maine, you can't have open fire under the same hood as gas.
Interesting.
Luckily there's two hoods. One hood is just for the gas equipment. The other hood is all the charcoal equipment.
Makes sense. I wouldn't necessarily know if that's true here, but I would imagine it is. But I also imagine that people probably skate by it in different ways.
I think most people do.
And probably hard though if your concept is.
Yeah, it was hard to hide it. We're like, you know, this is a grill restaurant. They're like, oh, okay, well, you're gonna be grilling. Yeah, you know, so.
All right, so you got the duct work in.
Yeah.
And duck then where are we? Tell us where we are now. I know you're not open yet, and TBD is in all caps.
Yeah, we're waiting on our final permitting from the city, which has been a huge struggle for a lot of people. You know, it used to be, I'd say, like 2 years ago, 2 weeks for start to finish for the process. And
Permitting?
Yeah.
Wow, that's
fast.
Yeah, to get the actual permit, you know.
Right.
You have to do all the work, and then they have to do their final inspections before you can open, but... The process has now, you know, gone to like a 13 to 16 week.
Wow.
From 2 weeks.
Why is that? It's funny because a lot of people we've had on the show is like, oh, the permitting process actually got better during COVID because people are doing things online. So you're one of the first guests that this has started that's had the reverse experience. I'm curious.
So during COVID, like during the first 2 years of COVID, it actually was easier. You could send pictures or send a video of the plumbing and they could approve it like that. Or, yeah, you could upload everything online. They've taken away all these benefits. The city has taken them away, and they're still extremely short-staffed. So, you know, the effects of COVID are still there. You know, people are getting sick, or they just don't have people to review all these plans. And they told me that they're getting 80 to 100 applications per week. And they have two people that review them. One of them's new. And the other, you know, the other ones, at least when we started, they were on vacation.
When you started, which was when?
We started the application process in May.
And they're still on vacation.
Yeah, and they're on vacation.
You know. Do you feel, that's a big number. Do you feel that as a consumer in Portland, that they're like restaurants popping up everywhere? They have so many applications, or is it just...
They're not all restaurants. I think a lot of it's just building. There's a lot of like development going on. There's a lot of condos going in. There's a lot of big buildings going on, like big for Portland, being built right now. But they, you know, we write emails, we call the city, and it's been working a little bit. We've been able to bump ourselves up in the list a little because they want to help small businesses rather than some of these large companies that, you know, so they are like somewhat prioritizing some small businesses, which is nice.
Are expediters a thing where you guys are? Not really.
There's no expediters. Really. You can ask them to expedite it. You know, I just like basically
just send a nice letter and hope for the best.
It's nice.
Bake some cookies, bring some hand rolls.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Like, I mean, it's like, please help us, you know, we are paying rent, you know, we're losing money. It's kind of like
the restaurant's totally ready to go otherwise.
It's a sob story. It's just please help
for
us.
For the most part.
But you're also, I imagine Portland is somewhat of a seasonal area to some degree, or no?
It's pretty seasonal. I mean,
we get pretty busy in summer, right?
So, you know, we stay open year-round, but the numbers are drastically different between the dead of the winter and the height of the summer. It's probably, I mean... Some weeks could be 10 times busier, you know.
Right.
So tell us a little bit about this specific concept. So you have three locations, and this specific concept, just from like my peeking around online, there isn't a ton yet, obviously. But it seems like it's your most ambitious yet, the biggest.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We're going all in.
You're going hard.
yeah, we're, you know, spending more money than we've ever spent. We're, you know, a lot of the stuff we did in the past, we just kind of did it ourselves. You know, we didn't hire professionals. And
we have a designer we're working with, an architectural designer I'm really excited to be working with. She's super talented. So, you know, before we kind of did the interiors ourselves or did our best with it at least.
And like the Mr. Tuna logo, like a buddy of mine drew that.
Yeah.
And now we actually have like a design company doing stuff. So yeah, I mean, it's definitely the biggest and most ambitious thing we've ever done, which is pretty scary because, you know,
it's terrifying.
Yeah.
Totally terrifying. And so it sounds like you spent more money on this project. You know, it sounds like you did a lot of things differently from Crispy Guy and Mr. Tuna. How tell us about like financing this project versus the other ones.
Well, Mr. Tuna started with like a loan. I don't even know if it was a loan, but my mom gave me like $1,000.
Thanks, Mom.
Yeah.
And
I put in like $2,000.
Yeah, like Marissa put in some money and I emptied out my bank account. Like basically we
got a hot dog cart.
Yeah, it was a hot dog cart. It wasn't a restaurant. It was
a cooler.
You know, we probably all in was less than $5,000 to get Mr. Tuna off the ground with all the permitting and the, you know, the even the food for the opening.
That's pretty impressive,
day.
It was pretty impressive. Yeah.
So yeah, and you know, Mr. Tuna is constantly, we've just been expanding it a little bit at a time. So we never really, you know, we never had to take a loan out for Mr. Tuna. We always just used.
Does mom get paid back?
No.
Does mom eat for free?
Sorry. Mom does eat for free, but she doesn't really eat sushi. So.
Oh no.
That's a tough one. Yeah. But yeah, she can come to Crispy Guy.
So everybody knows, tell me the lineage of the business. It's Mr. Tuna is the hot dog cart.
Come sushi. Truck,
right, started hot dog cart, it was first the cart, then the market, which is our brick and mortar,
right,
the public market house, and then we upgraded from the carts to these trailers, which is way
better. The original cart is gone or it's been stored somewhere?
I sold it in
America. Trying to get it out of there.
No, that's barn. Not the original. The original is gone.
We got a couple.
We had four of them. There's, we're down to one. These guys had an oyster, like a mobile oyster business, bought the other three.
Okay.
So we still have it just in case. You never know when you need like to get into like a small space. Yeah.
Could be fun. Yeah. So
you're holding on to that one. So it's not for sale, people.
It's
so don't
going
go emailing
the,
about.
It's going to the Mr. Tuna Museum.
So cart, and then
the counter
market, and then cart gets upgraded to a truck.
To trailers.
And then you add
how
many trailers?
So we have three total now.
Okay. And then Crispy Guy
comes.
And
then Crispy Guy.
And how long ago was Crispy Guy?
Crispy Guy.
Last summer.
Well, it started, Crispy Guy started in the public market house as like a pop-up.
Okay.
So me and my buddy,
right,
Kyle, who's like my partner and the chef at Crispy Guy, we just like, you know, he came back from Thailand. He was living there for a while and he wanted to do something. And we just, you know, talk, you know, like, daydreaming, oh, we could do this, you know, we could do that. And we, you know, he made some like chicken for me at the market one night for a bunch of us, and I was like, holy shit, this is so good. we should turn this into a restaurant.
That's how it started.
And you know, yeah, we just started doing like one night pop-up at, we did it at our buddy's restaurant, the High Rollers. We were like, one night, you know, fried chicken. It was just like chicken in the beginning, it was just chicken wings and
chicken sandwiches.
Buckets and sandwiches. It was just fried chicken. Maybe I think we had the cabbage salad. And then that turned into like two nights a week, then three nights a week. And then it was all pre-order. It was during COVID. And we were selling out in like, you know, 30 minutes. We put it up. 30 minutes later, all gone. So we knew we had something special. And at one minute, we were just like, okay, what do we want to do from here? And we just started looking for spaces, and it was like in the dead center of COVID, but
yeah,
we did it. So.
Did you get a good deal on the space that you got for Crispy Guy because it was in the middle of COVID, or was it, so this is your site, you have two COVID openings basically.
Yeah, I think we got a good deal. I mean, I definitely used used COVID to bargain a little and just be like, you know, we don't know what's going to happen in, you know, next year, 2 years, and I use that to get the price of the rent down a little bit and get a little you know, little money from the landlord to help us with the floors and stuff. But yeah, I think we got it. I mean, the location's great, and it came with a full basement, so we're only paying for the ground floor, and the basement was kind of like free.
That's nice.
An extra 1,500 square feet.
Yeah. Is everything financed essentially from the initial $5,000 that you put into the first truck? Have you built it off the business, or have there been loans? Have there been partners?
No financial partners. We use Mr. Tuna as kind of for the bank as a
collateral.
Yeah. So like in case, you know, shit went south, they could just, you know, take
care of
Mr. Tuna. Yeah.
Love the way collateral works.
Yeah.
We're pretty confident. Yeah.
scary notion though. And certainly.
Yeah.
You know.
So they used that, and I had to put in 20%, and then we used money from Mr. Tuna to put in the 20% to get the loan. Is it
right?
Like an SBA loan?
Yeah.
And that's for Crispy Guy and for?
And for Barfudo, yeah. So we did the same loan, but just for more money.
Right.
The new one.
That's pretty impressive. Kudos to you guys. That's really hard to do. And
yeah.
I think you're the first ones we've ever had on the show who's been like, I took $5,000 and parlayed it into probably hundreds of thousands of dollars. Five restaurants,
that's
into loans and whatnot.
Yeah,
that's a huge feat. That's amazing.
Yeah, well, all the money goes into that. I mean, if you looked at my personal bank account, you'd be like, you own restaurants? But there's no money in there. So.
You got a lot of assets, though.
Yeah,
that's really incredible. So it sounds like you're doing a lot of things differently this time with Barfuto, from DIY to professional designers. Tell us a little bit about this journey and how it's been better, how it's been more stressful, all the good things.
Ooh,
Ian's face just went, ooh.
Yeah, I'm in.
Working with the designer has been great because, you know, she might choose like finishes or materials that I would never think to work with. So it's kind of stepping out of your comfort zone a little bit and a little going into the unknown, but she's really great. She's super talented. Her name is Carrie. She's doing most of Barfuto. We're doing it together. Mr. Tuna was easy. I mean, we kind of just like went with our colors, just like blue and white, lots of natural wood.
Yeah. The tuna dude, Mr. Tuna is just like everywhere. We're just like, throw Mr. Tuna on everything. People love the logo. So,
yeah,
I mean, having designers nice. She also gets like trade discounts, which is cool.
Yes, that's a great
What else with
Barfuto?
What else has been different? I mean, there's been a lot of
bigger team.
Yeah.
I mean, we're hiring for a lot more positions, bigger managerial roles.
Right.
You know, the goal here is to kind of hopefully get it to a point where it's running, where we can step back a little bit more. You know, we have Ian as the chef. We hired a great general manager. So we don't have to be like as involved.
Are you guys in the day-to-day with Crispy Guy and with Mr. Tuna right now?
With Mr. Tuna, we are. I feel
never
really able to step away from Mr. Tuna. I mean, like a little bit, and then I'll just get sucked back in.
Why is that? Is it different kind of staffing? Or
just because sushi is so specialized, and there's not a ton of sushi people, like chefs, people with sushi experience in Maine. It's really hard to find, and we've basically just trained everyone from scratch. You know, a lot of the guys we have are like seasoned cooks, they're chefs, they've run restaurants, but they've never made sushi, and it's a whole other animal. So that's been tough, just finding people and, you know, holding on to them, because a lot of also people that have been cooking in hot kitchens, you know, they might not be their passion to work at a sushi.
Come and learn it.
Yeah.
Feel like they sort of mastered it and then say, see you later.
Yeah. Like they definitely didn't master it,
yeah.
But they like, you know, they, a lot of people come because the money's great and they're interested in learning something new, but eventually they're like, I miss cooking. You know, I don't want to make sushi anymore. So
one of the pluses of having a 5-outlet operation is that you then hopefully you can keep them, move them somewhere else if they're good and such as that. But that's interesting. How is staffing the trucks difficult?
Staffing the trucks isn't difficult because it's less people. You know, the trucks usually are one person per truck.
Okay.
One cook and one front of the house person. That's it. So, and we have, you know, the guys that have been doing it, they've been with us. One of the guys has been with us almost 4 years. You know, he like takes the winter off. I don't know what he does, but he's, and then he always comes back.
Are you nervous at the end of every season? You're are you coming back?
Well, people, you know, it's like a lot of work and long days. So by the end of the summer, people are freaking burnt out. They're just
and
like,
people doing. Is it made to order there? Oh, or yeah. Are you doing
everything
stuff?
Everything's made to. Well, a lot of the stuff's prepped at the market, right. At the brick and mortar. But you know, when we get to the cart, it's just put together, hand roll.
Hand roll has to be made to order.
You can't sandbag the hand rolls. Like, you got to make them right away. And we tell people to eat them right away because they get, you know, the seaweed.
Seaweed gets soggy.
Yeah, it gets soggy. It's not the same.
We were there when you guys were at Feast, and I remember.
We went, there's a concert during the summer, like an outdoor concert, and you guys had one of your trucks was at the concert
Thompson's Point.
Yes, that's where we had it. Nice. It was delicious.
And they were good. I mean, there were solid lines.
There was a solid line.
Slinging. I don't know if it was the seasonal guy, but whoever was there was doing a good job.
It's probably me.
He's the fastest one.
Yeah.
That's insane.
I was impressed by how fast it was.
How fast are you? Like, how quick?
I can make a hand roll in 15 seconds.
In 15 seconds?
Yeah.
And how, when it's like pumping during the summer, how many hand rolls are you cranking out of one truck?
Oh my God. I mean, at a concert.
15 seconds.
We could do a concert or some of the larger events. We could do 800, 1,000 hand rolls.
Wow.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
And you said there's not a lot of people with sushi experience in Portland.
No.
Where did your experience come from?
In Boston. Okay. Yeah. I was in Boston most of my career before we moved to Portland. And Providence, Rhode Island before that.
Right.
Marissa, you said something about, you know, you guys pay really well, and that's why it's not as hard to get people to stay. Tell us a little bit. I know you have like one fair wage at Mr. Tuna, and you know, tell us a little bit about that program and what it looks like for your other restaurants too.
Yeah, I mean, we definitely take really good care of our staff. You know, they're the whole reason we're successful and still running, and it's all on them. So it's really important that we take good care of them. I mean, Mr. Tuna's the service style is a little bit different, so it's not like a full-on restaurant. So they make a lot of tips, and they make really great tips. We pay a high hourly, you know, since they're not serving, it's not the lower wage that you would get.
Yeah. They make $15 an hour, like, to start as front of the house, and they get tips, you know. A crispy guy, it's not as high, but the tips are way better because it's, you know.
It's counter service.
Yeah.
It's not counter service.
Yeah, it's not counter. But we also do this thing in the kitchen, at Mr. Tuna, the tips are all pooled amongst everybody, like front, back
chefs
of the house.
Are making
everybody,
tips.
Everybody gets an even cut. And then at Crispy Guy, we have like a kitchen fee, or, you know, like a 4% that gets added onto the bill that goes directly to the kitchen staff. So that kind of helps, you know, with getting them a little more income.
I'm curious about why some people have different reasons. Why add it as an extra fee versus just making the food cost higher? Is it educating the consumer? What's the theory behind that?
I think it's a mental thing. I think people, you know, they look at the price of the food and they see like a value in that. And then the percentage, like, you're sure they see it and they know it's there, but like looking at the menu and seeing that like that higher number for the food might be something that, you know,
I mean, they're a lot more likely to like complain about like a pricey menu than like paying a service fee that goes to the staff. Like, you can't complain about that.
Right.
You can't complain about like paying people more.
Chicken sandwich has a certain price
right.
in someone's
right.
head, and you make it
right.
$24 and then it throws a wrench in the whole program.
Exactly.
Right. Even if the money is going to the kitchen, you
right.
know, they still like,
right.
oh, well, where, you know, how, why is
they
your, why is your burger $25 there? Why is your,
has anybody pushed back on the 4% service charge?
No,
never.
And do most people still leave a 20% service charge for the, like, for the front of house too?
I think it's between like 15 and 20 is about average.
Yeah. It's definitely pretty solid.
What's the one fair wage? Is that like a main thing, or this is yours, and it's, what is it? Mean exactly. It means everybody gets paid the same amount of money?
Yeah, it's national. It's not just in Maine, but
you need to have, like, I think you need to pay at least $15 an hour to tipped wait. tip workers.
Yeah.
And there's some other, I think there's some other requirements.
But. Yeah, there's an organization that basically is, it's called One Fair Wage. You can look at it. It's onefairwage.org, right?
Yeah.
And they basically are trying to bring up the standard for the minimum wage for tipped employees, and regular hourly employees. Because what's a tipped employee make in... What's their wage?
What's their minimum wage? Like 620?
650 or 625.
Something like that.
Which is like totally unlivable. Right? Yeah. So the whole point is that it should be like at least $15 an hour.
Yeah.
Across the board. And so at some of the other business models aren't quite as supportive to this model, right? For like the other restaurants. So how do you balance that?
Well, I mean, the tips at Crispy Guy are really good.
Yeah.
I think they're probably making more money at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Just because the check averages are higher and we sell
alcohol.
It's a
full service bar. Yeah. We're Mr. Tuna. It's just like beer, wine, sake. And that's only at the market. You know, the food trucks don't have alcohol. That definitely helps.
What about check? What about Barfudo? What's the plan there?
What is the plan?
We'll see. We're still figuring that out. We'll get there. But we'll always do our best. We are offering like health insurance. So that's a new benefit we just added.
Portfolio or just two?
So Mr. Tuna and Barfudo. Are we adding up Crispy?
No, they have it. And then
yeah,
like we give paid time off and sick like accrued time off and sick days and.
Which is basically unheard of for most.
We never got that.
How many people are you looking at having to hire for Barfudo?
I'd say like 20, 25, something like that.
Yeah. And you said that the trailers are two per. What's how many at Crispy Guy?
Crispy Guy is about 20.
Oh, it is, okay.
Like all Mr. Tuna, all in with everybody, it's probably around 20. I mean, there's a lot of like seasonal, like we got a lot of like college kids, high school kids that work. Take orders on the truck. You know, they're only around June through the end of August.
Barely.
But, you know, they do a hell of a job. And,
yeah, they're great.
Any thoughts now that you're, as you continue to grow, where you have to bring in somebody that does operations, HR, as a restaurant group now? Are those things that you've thought about?
We've started thinking about it. I mean, I've kind of been doing, like, the HRs. I just play whatever role I need
Marissa
to.
Marissa does everything.
Keeping the sales going.
Yeah, I've been trying to. We might need to hire someone pretty soon. I mean, our new manager at Fudo is going to be great. She's doing a lot of the operational, you know, day-to-day stuff. So that will be a huge help. So I don't have to worry about that as much. But
yeah, and then we have Sasha, Crispy Guy Sasha.
Runs, yep, she crushes
runs,
it.
Like, the front of Crispy Guy. So I don't really have to worry about that as much. But yeah. Fudo, as we're growing, we're realizing we just need more people and more infrastructure to make things happen, make them run smoothly.
Yeah.
Yep. It's growing pains, right? It's like, it's good to grow sometimes. Good problems to have. All right. Last thing before we go into take a little break and go into our 10 questions. So I saw on Instagram, you guys had some drama on Eastern Prom and got involved in local politics. Tell us, I've been fascinated lately by the like intersection of like small business and politics. And I think it's just creeping into like our everyday. So tell us about what happened and how you guys managed.
Oof. Yeah, this was a fun one. so, you know, we've been up on the promenade, Eastern Prom, which is this beautiful stretch of road overlooking Casco Bay in Portland. You know, there's this huge like lawn area, tons of people hang out, this playground, there's tennis courts, there's basketball courts. And we started bringing the food truck there, you know, in May of 2020, like in the peak or the beginning of the peak of the pandemic. And yeah, it's been a great location for us, and we've built a lot of our business around that location. And there's, been a lot of drama around that location. As it grew, it's become this huge thing where sometimes there's like 10 to 15 food trucks there on the weekend. And there's been some pushback from some of the residents that live on the promenade. They don't want the food trucks there. They're ruining their view. They're trying to blame the food trucks for all the trash problems of the promenade, which is not really the case. It's like we take our trash with us. It's people come there from all over, and they bring food from all over the city. And then they're complaining about the generators and all this nonsense. And, you know, I mean, they're valid points, but the city has come up with a solution to fix all these problems. There's a pilot program that was submitted to the city council, and there was three different options. One of them was keeping us where we are. The other one was moving us down to this parking lot. And the city council voted to keep us where we are, you know. And we were like, okay, that's great. Everything's great. A month later, the city manager just came in and overruled that vote. Basically said, okay, we're moving you guys to this lower lot, and there's going to be a lottery if there's more than 10 food trucks that apply, because it's a small lot, and they supposedly couldn't fit more than 10. So, you know, we've been kind of dreading this lottery because we've been up there forever, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, shit, we might not be able to be here anymore. And, you know, of course, we didn't get selected. You know, there's
four. It was just a random lottery, names in a hat. How many people applied?
It was a pinwheel. It was this electronic,
like, literally an electronic
pinwheel thing, and we were just, like, watching our face.
This is people's businesses. Yeah. That's insane. How many trucks applied?
14 applied. They chose 10. And two of the trucks that didn't get chosen, one of them was us, and the other one was this truck called 88 Donuts. And they were original food truck that parked First on the there. Promenade. They parked up there.
Did you have to be licensed to park on the promenade, or was it just like your standard, whatever, food truck license operator in the city?
You need a city license, and then there's like X amount of spots in the city where food trucks can operate, and that's one of them.
And that was one of them.
Right. And it wasn't really a popular one. You know, a couple of trucks did it, but, you know.
At the beginning, yeah.
But, yeah, as you know, restaurants were closing during the pandemic, really wasn't anywhere else to go.
Yeah,
it became, like, the epicenter of Portland. And, you know, everyone was there. Like, the whole city was hanging out on the promenade.
We hung out at the promenade. That's where we hung. Like, we hung out. Yeah, our kids played at the park there. The views are stunning. It's a public park. It's gorgeous. Yeah, the views are insane. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, this city manager basically sided with a couple of the residents over.
Because they were probably funding his campaign.
Yeah.
Probably. I don't need to get involved in it. I'm heated for you.
I mean, she's not even an elected official. So, like, it's not even okay. And she was the interim city manager. She's not even the city manager. She just kind of was filling in, making huge decisions like this that are affecting livelihoods of small businesses.
Right.
And it's like a domino effect. Everybody's affected by it. Like all the people that work for us, all the people we buy fish from, all the people we buy vegetables from, everything's
affected. Your whole livelihood just got changed because some person decided on a whim based on a couple of complaints.
So where is it now?
Yeah.
So, you know, this the second that we found out we weren't selected, they're like, what the heck are we going to do now? How do we change this? How do we figure this out? And, happened. I think, it became like a really hot topic in the news.
In the Portland news? Yeah. Did you guys have like camera crews like coming down?
Park it in front of this lady's house. And then start it there.
I don't even know if she
bring as many
Portland.
People as you can in front of her house.
Oh, I should, honestly. We did that. We parked the trucks in front of City Hall and we did like a little, little protest. But that was, that was after first, they're like, okay,
we posted on social media.
Oh,
that's what we did.
Sounds.
We made a post and we were like, you know, basically explaining the lottery and how it wasn't fair and it all, the decision somehow just falls on one person. I don't really understand how one person can be in charge of that big of a decision. But we've kind of rallied the troops via Instagram and
power of social media. Sometimes it's used for good.
Oh, it definitely works. So they, you know, we were basically like email the city manager, phone call.
And people called them?
Oh my God. I think they probably got over 1,000 emails.
They shut the phone off.
They shut the phones off? Hell yeah, guys. That's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, we had so much support. It was amazing. Like, I was blown away.
I was shocked,
Really blown away.
It was really awesome to see, like, the community come together for us, for sure.
And local news, like, coverage covered you guys.
Yep.
The
Press Herald, you know, they interviewed a bunch of us. The news was all there every day. And then, you know, the city, like, basically made a statement that they're looking into it. Then they sent an email to the four trucks that didn't get selected, and they wanted to call a little like Zoom meeting, and so they called this Zoom meeting, and you know, they were basically like, you know, we got this other location that we think would be great for you guys, you know, but it was crap.
And you can take this other location and shove it, basically.
Basically, I'm just like, thanks, but no thanks, and this isn't over. So that, you know, and then the way the conversation ended was like, we're gonna look and see if we can fit more food trucks. And I had to like bring
meanwhile,
it up.
They need your tax revenue, probably.
Yeah, it's a decent amount of money that they're getting. And,
yeah.
You know, they said, okay, well, we're gonna measure, we'll remeasure and see if we can fit some more trucks down there. But we weren't really like holding our breath. So like while that was going on, I'm like, okay, we're gonna organize this protest. And we like called all the trucks and we're like, hey, you guys like support us, even like ones that got selected or had nothing to do with the promenade, don't care. And we just parked all the food trucks on City Hall, just like right on the, you know, right on the bottom.
Were you
of the
serving
stairs.
Food while this was happening?
You know, we talked about it. I was like, this, you know, that might take away from what we're trying
it's
to accomplish here.
It's hard being hospitality
here.
People, like yeah. wanting to feed yeah. people at the same time.
Actually, there was the donut truck was
yeah,
handed
out.
We're handing out donuts to people. We were trying
never
to make a thing out of it
for a donut.
Yeah.
But you know that. So, and while we're doing, like, you look up in the window and the city manager's up there, like, staring down at us.
I don't know if
little...
she was up there, but there were, like, people gathered in the window.
Little, like, shitty,
we waved and they all hid.
Yeah.
Oh, they hid?
I didn't, yeah, they were
come
up
on,
there and we were, like, waving
head, like,
to them and then they all, like,
they
disappeared.
Back behind the, like, out of view of
yeah.
us.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and then, like, I think it was, like, an hour or two later, they're like, We're gonna fit all the 14 trucks.
It's like, what do you know? They can all fit.
Yeah,
like now
we,
that
like,
we actually
we
measured the
and then we can actually fit everyone. And they thought like, you know, okay, that's it.
So you accomplished change.
You accomplished
that's
change.
Pretty fantastic.
Is this your first and last foray into local politics?
I don't know. I mean,
we'll
get
more
involved
after
this. I mean, they keep messing with me. Maybe not. But
city council manager. Here you go.
Cool. So we're gonna do a slightly different pattern here today. We usually do like a lightning round at the end of our podcast, but we're gonna cut it off here for our broadcast on HRN, and we're gonna take it over to YouTube, so we can ask you 10 questions. At the same time, we're going to task you with cooking a dish in 10 minutes.
From the cool. new menu, so you guys
from
will get
the
a
new
sneak
menu.
Peek.
Does that have to be from the new menu?
So can he
but
like cook and
the...
I talk?
Yeah.
Either one, yeah, you can do it however you want.
Right.
You can both cook. You
Ian's
can both
talk.
I don't actually.
Marissa
you
can talk.
Cook.
You all can talk.
A lot of hands.
Yeah.
Before we leave, so that our HRN listeners gather our information, how do we find you guys on social, online, Barfudo? Tell us what they need to hear to find you.
Yeah. So the Instagram handle for Barfudo is bar_Fudo. So F-U-T-O, Mr. Tuna is Mr.Tuna_Maine. Crispy
guy.
Crispy guy is just crispy guy. Guy, G-A-I, Thai for chicken.
Cool.
Yeah.
And we're at, we are opening soon, and at Tillit NYC. And you'll find the video on YouTube/Tillit. Yeah.
Cool.
There we go.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
I'm Louisa Kasdan, host of Let's Talk About Food. I recently hosted an exciting live podcast event in Boston and interviewed incredible women entrepreneurs who have received small business coaching from the Samuel Adams Brewing the American Dream program.
When I was applying to law school and I got in, I said, you know what? I'm still young. Let me pivot and go into the food industry. And really follow my passion.
I was kind of scared. It was a new thing to me. It was like, hey, I don't want me in the newspaper. I just want to be in my room in my house. So that was when I'm like, okay, now that I'm in the local newspaper, I better not disappoint the people that, you know, that have this belief in me.
And on the days that you're tired or you feel defeated, just keep going. And 10 people might tell you no, but that doesn't mean that's your end result. You just have to keep going.
Hear their stories on Let's Talk About Food, available wherever you listen to podcasts. Thanks again to Samuel Adams Brewing the American Dream for supporting this episode.
Welcome to Order Fire from Opening Soon. We're going to do 10 questions in 10 minutes, or try to do it in 10 minutes, we'll see, with this awesome chef team from Bar Fuzhou, who's opening soon in Portland, Maine. And we're excited to be joined here today with Marissa Lewicki, who is the Director of Operations across the restaurant group. We have Chef Jordan and Ian, who is the CDC at Bar Fuzhou, who's also, like I said, opening soon in Portland, Maine. All right, what are we cooking today, Ian?
Twice fried eggplant with a spicy miso glaze on top of it.
Ooh, sounds good. All right.
Step off. We're gonna start the clock.
Start the clock.
And let you do it.
All right. How quickly can you do this? Can you do it in 10 minutes?
I hope so.
All right. So we're going to pepper you guys with questions from the sidelines. What is your favorite menu item at Mr. Tuna since Bar Fuzhou is not open?
Oh, I know mine.
Go ahead. You eat it every day.
Mine's a tuna de tigre. So it is a poke. So we use yellowfin tuna. It's like a coconut Thai chili sauce, crispy shallots, cilantro, onions, all the good stuff.
I think my favorite is the Subarashi Toro Don, which is like a bowl of rice topped with slices of otoro, slices of lean tuna, there's some chutoro tartare, a little quail egg inside, and it gets uni and salmon roe. It's pretty baller.
Sounds delicious. Yeah. Ian, what's your favorite?
I really like nigiri, and we do nigiri at the market, so like I really like just the traditional tuna zuke nigiri as well sometimes.
What's the most ordered menu item?
The Mr. Tuna.
The Mr. Tuna roll,
our
signature sushi roll.
It's tuna avocado with broiled spicy scallops and crab on top. It's tabico, eel sauce, tempura flakes, scallions. It's
Is it the roll that started it all?
It didn't start at all. It wasn't on the menu because we can't make that on the cart. On the hot dog cart, we'd be a bitch. But as soon as we opened the market, it was definitely the most popular thing. So
Is the menu done already for the new spot? Ian, where is it?
It's pretty close. I feel comfortable with it. It's like also since we're like pushing back open for all those reasons we stated earlier, like trying to be like super hyper seasonal and figuring that out as well.
Yeah. Cause like we have like a menu that we're like, okay, we're opening Memorial Day weekend, and it's like, oh shit, none of those vegetables are the same vegetables that we're getting now. So yeah, we're kind of on a sliding scale here with that. So
yeah, chef, walk us through what's happening over here on the bowl.
I am using some dried arbol chilies really quickly, and I'm going to finely slice some garlic, and then I'm going to take this really hot oil and pour it over to lightly cook it and get some of that aroma out, and take the rawness out of the garlic, and then I'm going to mix in some white miso, mirin, yuzu juice to make the glaze, and then I'm going to twice fry the eggplant.
And the eggplant's already in the oil?
Not yet.
There's too many questions.
Okay, what's your best food cost item?
And you could throw in a crispy guy, too, if there's something there that says.
I'd say it's probably the salmon skin hand roll.
Just talking about that.
Just because it's, it's a byproduct. It's freaking delicious, but it's, we use the salmon, so pretty much everything that's.
Are you able to buy other people's salmon skin, or it's only your?
It's only ours. Your they go through a ton of salmon. So
is that even a thing you could buy if you needed to?
I don't think you could buy salmon skin. nah. I mean, whatever we have for salmon skin, that's what we put out on the carts, and when it's gone, it's gone. So that one and probably the sweet potato.
All right, back to the list. Something you're doing to make your business more sustainable?
I think taking care of our staff is a big thing. Trying to invest in our staff and, having people that are not only we're invested in, but they're invested in the company and they want to be here for a long time and they want to grow with the company. I think that's probably the biggest thing right now.
It's important. You don't have a business without your employees, right?
That's right.
How do you plan to hire and retain great employees?
Same thing. Yeah.
Benefits, health insurance, we added,
Keeping things interesting. I think doing a lot of the collabs and the pop-ups that we do is a big part of that. Like, you know,
yeah, it's a lot of
just fun things. We do a lot of, like, a lot of events in other cities, and we do, you know, even just like with the food truck, the concerts and stuff. Those are all fun. You know, watch the show after, so like things like that.
Yeah. Ian, how long have you been with the company?
Well, this is 3 years straight, and when he first opened, I helped him out a lot on the cart.
Oh, yeah.
Grimace, do you want to explain Grimace?
Well, he was like the prep guy. Me and him prepped everything together. I think it's far enough into the business we can say we did it out of my house.
We literally had our business in our apartment for 2 years.
Oh yeah. I mean, she didn't really enjoy it.
Well, I'd wake up to a bunch of guys in my kitchen, you know,
cutting fish off.
Six in the morning, rice cookers and fish.
Did they at least make you like a nice Japanese breakfast?
They didn't even have time.
Come on.
No.
What's been your worst building or developing moment so far?
Well,
is that a no man? There's been a lot.
Yeah,
kind of.
I mean, we had to switch contractors in the beginning. That was kind of
for Barfuto.
Yeah, for Barfuto. That was a big one, and then you know, just the whole hood
ductwork
thing, and
we talked about this earlier in the episode. If you're able to listen on Heritage Radio Network, essentially the former restaurant occupant and the landlord of the building, I guess, took out their venting to make modifications to the building, left the hoods, but then left you with 100 yards of venting to put back into
right.
the space.
And
as a surprise.
And no makeup air and no fans. So we had to pretty much do all that.
That's a pretty big unforeseen expense. And not a fun one either.
No. I mean, we
spend however much on deck work.
It's not in the budget.
Right.
It's got to come from somewhere.
What's happening in this bowl, Ian?
I just added the yuzu juice, the mirin, the shiro miso, and the garlic. Oh, I'm just mixing it up.
Mm-hmm. All right, we've got about 4 minutes left. So I'm going to give you the next. We've got 3 questions, so we're doing well.
Sweet.
Most influential role model within or outside the hospitality industry?
Oh, wow.
It can be anybody. It could be a mom. It could be a famous chef or whatever.
Oh, wow.
And it can be for any of you guys.
That's a toughie. You know, I met a chef last summer, Ashley Christensen, and she's been a huge role model for me, and definitely a huge resource. She's taken us and brought us to certain events and invited us down to some fundraisers that she does, and just introduced us to a lot of people, and we really love her. I really look up to her.
Yeah. Anybody else you want to add? Ian?
Got a lot of really good mentors over the time. Like, pretty much anyone who ever just takes a chance on like a young cook, then
good. Yeah. Take a chance on a young cook. All right, what's been the best business resource or advice you've received?
That's tough.
Well, you know, this guy that I used to kind of work with, he used to say, count the pennies and the dollars will take care of themselves, or watch the pennies and the dollars will take care of themselves.
Huh.
So, you know, like, not always, you know, kind of looking at the big picture instead of just looking at what's right in front of you. Like,
yeah.
You could. That's a shitty answer.
No, that's a great answer.
Yeah,
count the small stuff because it all adds up. I like it.
You got anything better than that?
No, that's good then. That makes sense.
Last question. One thing you tell a young chef about the path to ownership?
Be patient. It's not going to happen overnight. And stick with it. There's going to be ups and downs, and you just got to push through the hard times, because you know, eventually, hopefully, things will go well, and you know, you're not going to get there without a lot of hard work and a lot of bumps in the road.
You guys bootstrapped it all the way up. I'm really impressed.
Yeah, if you listen to the episode, you'll hear about how these guys took essentially $5,000 in a hot dog cart and have turned it into 5 restaurants and 60-ish employees.
Pretty impressive.
And to keep it all under their own finances and ownership is pretty awesome.
And Ian is working hard over here with 2 minutes left on the clock.
Oh, we're good.
You're crushing it.
Tell us where we're at, what's going on over there.
So I've twice fried the eggplant just to get it like cooked through and crunchy, and then I just sauce it up.
Now, is this something that's going to be on the opening?
It definitely will be on the opening.
Yeah.
Available.
It's
one of my favorite things.
It actually will be. It'll be 100%
on the,
Have you guys been tasting and testing?
Yeah, we've done a couple. Like, we were doing these things before we had the name and the concept like dialed in. We were calling Hezekiah Nights at Mr. Tuna, and we were testing a lot of the stuff we thought about using. We did a pop up at Butcher and Bee in Charleston, and then we're starting to do some preview nights at Oxbow Brewing in Portland. So we'll be doing some like grill nights, skewer nights at Oxbow. So yeah, whenever we can, like, just try to taste as much and dial in what we want to do.
Great. That's our 10 minutes. Y'all did great.
You guys crushed it.
Ooh, crushed
great.
It.
Good job.
Good job, Ian. You don't look sweaty at all.
Still got it.
Where can we follow all the news for Barfuto?
Well, on the Instagram.
Probably Instagram, yeah. Bar_Futo, F-U-T-O. The website will be www.eatfuto.com.
Yeah.
This was not in the podcast or yet in the video, so I'll give you one more question. Where does Barfuto, the name, come from?
Oh, so Fudo in Japanese means like fat or big.
Grand.
And this is like our grandest, biggest thing we ever did. It's like twice the size of any space we ever had. It's like, at least twice the money we've spent on it.
Yeah.
This is our big shot.
Go big or go home.
That's right.
We love it. Congrats, guys.
Congrats. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Opening Soon is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.